Well, hello and welcome to the Red Phone Zone. This is issue number 55. I am your host, Aaron.
And I am your other host, Ethan.
Neat. And we are a weekly podcast where lately we've just been talking about movie genres. Kind of the way that our thing's been going is we've just been inviting people on and allowing them to choose which movie genre that they would like to talk about. And who do we have on tonight, and what do they want to talk about, Ethan?
Tonight, we've got Mr. Monty Cook on the line. Say hello, Monty.
Hello, Monty.
But it never fucking fails.
Yeah, never fails. Every time.
How are you guys doing?
We're doing good. We're a little, wet out here.
Pour water on my computer.
Yes, well, that would make it match the exterior as well as the interior.
Yeah.
Of course, Monty, why don't you tell our fine listeners who you are?
And what do you do?
Yes.
Who's your daddy, and what does he do?
All right. So I'm Monty Cook. I've been a role-playing game designer for about 23 years now. I've also done a lot of fiction writing and a lot of other kinds of writing. I have a nonfiction book as well as two novels that are both in the fantasy genre. Probably best known for 3rd edition Dungeons & Dragons, but, 23 years is filled with a lot of different things. So if you're a gamer, you probably played something that I had something to do with at some point.
And of course, your feature film debut was in The Gamer's Darkness Rising, wasn't it?
That is right, yes.
Your tour de force, your all-star performance in that film.
I am proud to say that I have an IMDb entry, yes.
Yeah, excellent. Most of us, we can't do that because we keep flagging them for deletion. Apparently, high school movies don't count, so.
Jeesh. Yeah, I saw that. Holy crap. Uh-huh. How about that?
Oddly, they are releasing, you're getting a new DVD release, Monty, on Darkness Rising. I think it's just about to come out now or sometime soon.
In fact, I was one of a group of people that recorded a brand new commentary track for it.
Bonus. That is awesome. That is awesome. So we've got a guy who has
actually been in a movie.
Yeah. This is an iconic moment for episode 5.5.
It's groundbreaking.
I know.
Groundbreaking. But Monty, I actually saw Darkness Rising and had nothing to do with you, and I just now realized that. Mm-hmm. I saw that like a year ago. I think I watched on Instant Stream on Netflix.
Yep.
Yeah, but that was pretty cool. Before we get into this movie stuff, we have a segment we like to call Geekly Happenings. And so we talk about news that we find relevant to us geeks. Well, as Ethan likes to put it, he talks about it and I react.
Yes, yes.
All right. So talk about it and I'll react.
All right. Well, you already know the titles and release dates were announced for The Hobbit.
Yeah, Jesus fucking shit Christ. There we go. There's my response.
But, okay.
Yeah.
Well, we got first film titled The Hobbit, An Unexpected Journey will be released on December 14th, 2012.
Mm-hmm.
So right before the pending apocalypse, end of the world. So we will get at least the first part of The Hobbit before the 2012
Phew.
Business. So, yeah. However, we're going to be, if the world does end in 2012, we won't be able to see the last half, which comes out as The Hobbit There and Back Again on December 13th, 2013. There you go. getting some Hobbit stuff. I think there was also a confirmation from Peter Jackson that Orlando Bloom is going to be appearing in The Hobbit. Now, I'm guessing that's probably going to be a cameo.
Well, I mean, that's
what I think, too.
He is playing Legolas, and I don't think they're going to, rewrite, Bilbo to be Legolas or anything.
We know a lot of the Lord of the Rings fans are rabid and would probably, lynch people for altering much of the story, so...
Yeah.
Well, we'll see,
Yeah, I'm actually listening to the audio book of The Hobbit right now.
Oh, cool.
And I've read it a billion times. And I was right, because I don't remember, a while ago you were trying to tell me that the Gandalf is hardly in it, and he's in it quite a bit.
Is he
is, well, certainly
I say he just doesn't do
certainly
a lot,
in
though.
The first half.
No.
I mean, yeah.
I seem to remember he leaves at one point.
Oh, he does. He does. You know? He leaves and comes back, and he leaves and he comes back. Yeah. He does the same damn thing in Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, well, you don't want him in there too much, the whole Deus Ex Machina thing of, yeah. I'm Gandalf, I will rain death upon you.
Sure. Absolutely.
So, yeah, you know.
Look, I'm more looking forward to The Hobbit than I could have ever looked forward to The Lord of the Rings. So,
yeah, I love The Hobbit.
I do too. Could be really good, could suck. I have a sneaking suspicion, and this is just sneaking suspicion. It's not based on anything except for the Lord of the Rings movies, but I have the suspicion that they're not going to get the tone of the book right in the movie. I think it's going to be all somber and serious like the Lord of the Rings, and The Hobbit was a lot more whimsical and more fun. But what the fuck do I know?
We'll see. Yeah.
Peter Jackson is a fine filmmaker, and
he has an Academy Award.
Yeah, no, there he's you go. Got two or three, something like that.
Speaking of a fine director, one of your personal favorites, Michael Mann,
I love Michael.
Is close to signing on to direct Go Like Hell, based on the book Go Like Hell, Ford Ferrari and Their Battle for Speed and Glory at Le Mans by A.J. Bames. That is a huge title.
That is a huge title. Poor Fred.
Apparently it's a story that tells how Henry Ford II, with the help of a young visionary named Lee Iacocca and a former racing champion turned engineer Carroll Shelby, concocted a scheme to reinvent the Ford Company. They'd enter the high-stakes world of European car racing, where an adventurous few threw safety and sanity to the wind. They would design, build, and race a car that could beat Ferrari at its own game at the most prestigious and brutal race in the world, something no American car had ever done. So, mainly, I'm just pointing out, Michael Mann's making another movie!
I will see that, and I couldn't care less about the car stuff. But, you know, I'll see it, because Michael Mann makes good biopics. I mean, he's a fantastic director.
Are there aliens or magic or something? I mean,
not so much.
It depends on how much beer you drink before you go.
All right.
Fantastical.
I can pretend to care about that.
Speaking of drinking lots of beer, we've reported a few times on Akira. we haven't mentioned the Uncharted Drake's Fortune movie based on the video game, but both of those movies have now lost their directors.
Mm-hmm. Which is something that I called last week, and you're all like, you're full of shit.
So, yeah.
I'd like to point it out. I was right about something for once in my life.
You were right. There we go. David O. Russell will no longer direct Uncharted Drake's Fortune due to creative differences, and Deadline saying that the Hughes brothers will no longer be on Akira. So first they lose they lose Keanu Reeves and his whomping star power. And, I really don't care. I'm not a huge Akira fan.
Yeah,
either,
I mean, I think we said it last week or the week before. I mean, at this point, they just shouldn't make the movie.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's obvious. I haven't seen any positive reaction to this stuff at all. And I would think that maybe that might be what's kind of going on here is it's, you know, this is its death throes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, you know, good.
And we've talked a little bit about the Total Recall remake. Not really remake, sort of. It's more in line with what the book is.
Yeah.
The book was, or the short story, I guess, was. But tons of people have been announced to be in it. I mean, obviously, Colin Farrell is going to be playing the Douglas Quaid character. It doesn't include Mars this time.
Damn.
The new movie ditches the Martian storyline. Maybe, I don't know. Ditches the Martian storyline from the original pick and instead involves nation states Euro-America and New Shanghai. Farrell plays Douglas Quaid, a factory worker who begins to believe he is a spy, although he doesn't know for which side. They announced a bunch of casting for this. Some small bits like John Cho is going to be playing the recall salesman. Mm-hmm. Bill Nighy is going to be in there as Quato. I wonder if he's going to have a fetus.
Bill Nighy,
I hope
the
so.
Science guy?
That's what I was hoping, but no, it's Bill Nighy, the Davy Jones.
And then
fine British actor, actually.
We're going full circle again. Last time I talked about Bill Nighy, that was brought up. The science guy? It was Shea.
He's playing Quato, so I wonder if he's going to have a fetus attached to his chest.
I hope so. I thought that was an interesting character.
Or maybe he is the fetus.
That'd be even better.
Kate Beckinsale is going to be starring as Laurie, which I'm thinking Laurie might be the Sharon Stone character.
I don't remember any names from that.
And again, I don't know how remotely close the original movie is to the book, but mm-hmm. that would mean Beckinsale is playing a bad guy. And Jessica Biel is playing Melina, who's obviously the prostitute character, not the one with the three boobs, though. And Bryan Cranston is playing the villain. He's not someone that I recognize. But
Bryan Cranston?
Yeah.
Bryan Cranston was the dad for Malcolm in the Middle. and he was a voice of Superman.
That's pretty
something.
Awesome, actually.
Yeah, I like him.
I wonder if we're
He's
gonna
got
get...
a new show called Breaking Bad, too.
Yeah, there you go.
Okay. I wonder if we're going to get a Colin Farrell saying, "Welcome to the party, Richter."
I bet you we will.
Oh, no. Some other news I've
Sharon
got...
Sharon Stone played Laurie, so that would be correct.
The other big news I've got all pertains to DC Comics.
Yeah, a bunch of DC Comics news.
Yeah, DC announced the other day that it's going to renumber its entire comics line beginning in late August and September with new number one issues. At the same time, DC is going to go digital day and date, which is actually a pretty big thing.
That's a gigantic thing.
With its full line offering all new titles digitally on the same day as print copies are available. So they're going to kick off on August 31st when DC releases the last issue of Flashpoint, and the first issue of a new Justice League title, the new Justice League number one, will kick off a storyline by Jeff Johns and Jim Lee. So just based on Jeff Johns and Jim Lee, I'm going to have to check that one out.
Yeah, I like both those guys.
Apparently, this is the first time they've worked together on a comic.
I didn't know that, but yeah. I'm not surprised.
The new title will be a contemporary take on the origin of the team, and those two titles will be the only two DC comics released on that date. Following the launch of the program, another 51 titles will be renumbered, beginning with number one issues. I mean, that's huge, DC Comics doing that. So.
Yeah, well, I mean, it kind of sucks, too, because, you know, I mean, that's one of those things. Well, I mean, it's one of those things that I like about DC is just, like, the deep, rich history of the characters and, like, the long, ongoing continuities of the, hey, look,
there's a running joke, Monty. Wow. We used to have a co-host that said, what did he
continuity.
Use? Yes, he used to say continuity.
They have a nice, long, rich, long-going continuity in these stories, and if they reset and reboot everything, you kind of lose that. So, I mean, I don't know.
I'm not really familiar with what they're really doing in Flashpoint, so...
Yeah.
Yeah, but DC has rebooted themselves.
They have.
Yeah.
A number of times.
So is Marvel.
Their only real difference now is they're starting over at number one, whereas previously they didn't do that, really.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, you know, whatever. I mean, if it helps... I mean, I know comic sales are really bad, and if it helps that, great. But from a fan point of view, I feel like, okay, you know, you've done this to us before. What's going to be new this time, you know?
Yeah, and I'm actually kind of surprised it's not another crisis. So, they had the habit of doing, you know, 40 bajillion different crises all the time. So,
I agree. But, you know, maybe it'll be cool. You know, I'm a big fan of the people involved, so.
Well, the other big news I've got is Superman news. Superman is, as some
deported?
People know. What's that?
Did he get deported?
No, he didn't.
Damn.
This actually has nothing. It actually has to do with the legal battle between DC
The Schusters.
The Schusters.
All right.
Man of Steel, of course, is coming out in 2012. Mm. Less than a year after that, certain rights pertaining to the character are going to revert back to the families of the original creators, Jerry Siegel and Joe Schuster. Everything that the pair invented, now we finally get some clarification on what they're getting, everything that the pair invented for Superman before they began working for DC Comics will be owned by their families. Now, everything they came up with for the Superman mythology after DC started paying for them will still belong to the comics giant, which is still owned by Warner Brothers. As a result, Siegel and Schuster Estates will own the rights to Superman's costume, as well as his ability to, quote, leap tall buildings in a single bound, other iconic aspects like his ability to fly and most of his rogues gallery, including arch nemesis Lex Luthor, came into being under the DC Comics umbrella and therefore belonged to the company.
Now, we're going to see a new costume for sure.
Yeah. Essentially what this means is starting in 2013, the families and Warner Brothers DC could both proceed with their own Superman movies. However, a Siegel-Schuster movie would essentially be based around the elements created in 1938.
Which could be really cool.
Yeah.
I would love to see that.
Well, the Warner Brothers movies would be based on what the article calls the modern Superman. A 1938 movie could not show Superman flying, while a modern Superman would not have access to the classic costume. So it's kind of interesting.
He'd be jumping. He'd be flying naked.
Yes.
Awesome.
It's Superman in the buff.
Yeah.
Super buff.
Man, I hate.
You know,
Go ahead.
That classic costume is pretty different even from the modern costume.
It is.
Yeah, but the thing is, it's still similar enough to
it's got
to,
the shield, it's got the colors.
And I know DC is still countersuing, actually, the attorney for the Schusters who over various things that the lawyer has been doing to, or allegedly been doing to...
Mr. Lawyer in training here.
Yes. Allegedly been doing to basically create this rift between DC and the Schusters and sort of propagate and basically get a big cut of this money that's been flying around. So,
I mean, I feel for them, but how long has this fucking battle been going on?
Let's see, since the 70s?
Yeah, I mean, we're talking, what is that, 30 years?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I feel for them. They should get something out of it, but fuck, man, it's turning into greed.
Yeah.
It reminds me of the Bond nonsense that's been going on forever as well.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel for them, and I feel for DC, but, you know, I've said it before, but, you know, it's the fans that suffer, you know, because mm-hmm. there's this bullshit about, you know, who gets $1.58, and we don't get a good Superman movie, or we get naked flying Superman mm-hmm. or jumpy Superman.
And I think the biggest thing that's going to hit is what it's going to mean to the Superman costume, because his costume is so iconic.
Yeah.
And changing that is not going to sit well with fans.
But, you know, I for one, okay, let's pretend that there were no DC or there were no Schuster and it was just a singular entity and they decided to change his costume, I'd be fucking pissed.
Mm-hmm.
But because of the fact that this is because of legal mumbo jumbo and I understand it. Mm-hmm. I don't have to like it, but I understand it.
But pretty much what it boils down to, it's just the costume is the big thing the Schusters are getting.
What about Lois Lane?
As far as I know,
she is certainly an issue number one in the Action Comics number one. Yeah.
Well, I know it wasn't the Daily Planet.
No.
In the first issue, stuff like that, and what was I going to say? Gosh, the other thing is like they've retooled his origin so much that I don't think it's the origin that we know for Superman, you know, being found by Ma and Pa Kent, mm-hmm. was the original origin. I really don't know. So hey, you know, Superman, you know, we've talked a bit about the Superman movie, talked a bit about, you know, all that good stuff. I think Aaron is now checking to see, what pertains to it, but I'm going to go on. I've got a couple just little brief ones.
That's all I have is brief stuff also. Yeah.
The Lion King is coming out in 3D.
Lois Lane is in Action Comics number one.
Oh, there you go. The Lion King hits 3D theaters on September 16th. I'm in for that.
I'm there. And I don't care.
It'd and be then weird it comes out on Blu-ray just like the next week, I think.
Badass. That'd be like my birthday.
Yeah.
But, I'm all
Star Wars and The Lion King for your birthday.
Fuck
man,
yeah. I mean, what?
It's a good year.
It's a good year to turn old. But I don't, you know what I mean? Like, I'm not as adamantly against 3D as you are, Ethan. But I don't care. I mean, it's mm-hmm. the fucking Lion King in the theater again. I mean, I'm there. I'm so there. I'm really excited about
totally.
It.
Totally. I'm hoping it's going
to
hit IMAX.
I can't. Oh man, I can't wait to take Chloe. That's going to be awesome. Oh, that's going to be so much fun. I have small news. Let's get it in here. And you probably saw it. And this is going to sound like, you know, why the fuck are you bringing this up? But oh god damn it. Sorry, I can't remember his name now.
Old Spice guy?
No, not the Old Spice guy.
That's one I've got.
Patrick Dempsey is leaving Grey's Anatomy.
Oh, okay.
And yeah, you know, who fucking cares?
I know he wants to be Doctor Strange.
But he wants to be Doctor Strange, and he's also trying to get into the Star Trek sequel. So I'm kind of wondering if he might be leaving because of the fact that... he wants to be in those and not turned, and not considered tied down for those.
I'm trying to contemplate Patrick Dempsey as Doctor Strange.
He's been campaigning for it for years, apparently.
It might work.
It would work.
See, I'm a firm, but he's kind of old. But I still want Jeffrey Rush. I still want Jeffrey Rush for Doctor Strange.
I don't have a problem with Jeffrey Rush's age as much so much as I have with his. He's a little out of shape for Doctor Strange.
Well, that can always change. But
well, I hope.
I mean, Doctor.
Yeah, Doctor Strange is supposed to be a pretty good-looking guy.
Yeah.
And I love Jeffrey Rush. I absolutely love Jeffrey Rush, and I'm not speaking ill of him. But and I think Patrick Dempsey could do it justice. Yeah. I think he could do just fine. It could probably be done better. But, you know, mm-hmm. he's also got a lot of passion for the role, which goes a long way with me.
Yeah, so, I agree.
Well, the last time we saw such passion was, you know, Nicolas Cage for Ghost Rider. And we saw what we got there.
His passion was all about Superman.
Yeah, speaking of passion,
Isaiah Price 2, this time it's personal.
Yes, passion all right. harder.
All right.
The Old Spice guy, Isaiah Mustafa, desperately wants to be Luke Cage, so bad that apparently he paid for and shot his own fan trailer to send to Marvel.
Kind of cool.
I tried to watch it, but the YouTube, it got taken off of YouTube.
Did it?
Mm-hmm.
Huh.
So I haven't actually seen it, so I don't know what it looked like or anything. But
it looked all right. I mean,
yeah, he might be good, but I really doubt that they'd. Nobody in there like that.
They'd want to put somebody like a bigger name.
But there's right now. I think the name attached to it's Tyrese Gibson.
That's actually what I was just thinking.
Yeah, and the last thing I've got is other than the trailers that have the two trailers I've got here is Jerry Conway, the actor who played Kinnicky in Grease, and also was Jeff Conway's. Whatever, I'm sorry.
He died.
It was also Zach Allen on Babylon 5. He passed away this last week at the age of 60. So that makes three people out of Babylon 5 that have died, and that's just a sad thing. I don't remember him from Grease.
He's Kinnicky.
Yeah, I know. I've never watched Grease all the way through. So.
Oh, really?
Well, he was also in Taxi.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's his other big thing. Part. But I always remember him as from Babylon 5.
And he was in this very short-lived show back in the early 80s called Wizards and Warriors.
Hey, yep. Nice.
I was looking over his IMDb when he died, and, yeah, I remember seeing that. I don't remember Wizards and Warriors, but I saw it on his IMDb. If we're going to go ahead.
It was this amazing show. I mean, it was clearly cashing in on the popularity of D&D. I mean, it was D&D as a sitcom, if you can believe it. It was really weird, but kind of funny and cool. I mean, I thought it was cool when I was 12 years old.
Cool. I've never actually seen it, so
you should check it out on YouTube. You can see whole episodes, I think.
Yeah. We're going to go off of 80s icon, whatever, that have died in the past week. I don't know when, but Clarice Taylor died.
Mm-hmm. From The Cosby Show.
From The Cosby Show. She was the Huxtable grandmother. She was,
million.
Well, she was 93. I was going to say she was Cliff's mother in the show. And I actually just watched all of The Cosby Show all the way through again, like, a couple weeks ago. So, I mean, I must have killed her.
Must have.
Sucks to be me.
Only got two new trailers out this week that I've seen. One is a new Muppets trailer.
That was fucking awesome.
I'm jazzed for the Muppets.
I loved that trailer.
Did you catch Danny Trejo?
I did.
That was hysterical.
I'm so excited about that trailer.
And like Chris Cooper's in the movie.
Yep.
I mean, it's got tons of people in this movie.
I'm totally huge cast.
I'm totally there for Thanksgiving. That's going to be awesome. Oh. Monty, do you love the Muppets? Come on, tell us you love the Muppets.
Oh, I absolutely do. Yeah, I read that. I love that trailer too. My Facebook page. It's just you know, especially if you don't know what you're looking at.
Yeah, exactly. It caught me by surprise.
Yeah, I was fortunate to see it in theaters.
Me too.
So I didn't see it. Oh, I didn't know what I was seeing. I was like, oh, it's another romantic comedy. Yeah. And then there's Kermit. I'm like, I'm so there.
Yeah, I mean, I think I saw that on, it had to have been Pirates.
Yeah.
Pirates 4, but
that's
yeah.
the only good thing at Pirates 4.
Oh, God damn.
And the other trailer I got, I saw was 50-50. Which is the only reason I mention it is because it's Joseph Gordon-Levitt.
Yeah,
and apparently it's one of his best performances.
They're gonna say that shit. They're trying to get him an Oscar.
So yeah, I mean, he plays a guy. Kid who gets cancer, and
him and Seth Rogen, right? Yeah.
So it looks like got some comedy to it. Look kind of entertaining.
Cancer's hilarious.
Yeah, cancer's funny.
You know, though, if Gordon-Levitt's in it, I'll watch it.
Yeah, me too.
I mean,
I think he's awesome.
Aaron is on the record by saying, and I fully endorse this, is that he's probably one of the best actors, one of the greatest actors of our generation. Really.
He is.
I agree. I do. Yeah.
every time I see that guy, he does something good. So
I want to see Hesher, whatever the hell that is.
Hesher.
It's playing at Liberty Hall. It's a theater in Lawrence, but I'd like to see it, and we'll see.
Now, I even liked him as Cobra Commander. What can I say?
I liked him. You know, that, I liked him as Cobra Commander. Also, I did not like that movie, but I liked him. I mean, he was pretty cool.
That is all the news I've got.
All right, I
got
to talk box office. Oh. We got to talk box office.
Talk box office.
I'm trying to get my computer going again, so I don't know the numbers.
Oh, you don't memorize these things?
Fuck no, man. I don't know my middle name, Milhouse. But and the only reason we're going to talk about this is because of the movie poll that we got going on with the Bag of Boardcast, where.
Bag of Boardcast is a comic book a podcast that we also go back and forth with, Monty.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
Yeah, they're a lot of fun, but a couple, I don't know, a month ago or so, we all filled out these doohickeys.
These polls, summer movie brackets, basically.
Summer movie brackets where we're trying to guess, like, what is what's going to make the most money. And so far, I think four of the movies have come out.
As of this last weekend, yeah, I think four of them are
something like that. This past weekend, we had two of the movies open up, which were Kung Fu Panda 2 and The Hangover Part 2. Wow, sequels, imagine that. Uh-huh. And I got into a little bit of argument with everybody on the show, except for Paul, about I thought that it was going to be Hangover 2. Everyone else thought it was going to be Kung Fu Panda 2. And I was actually surprised that Hangover 2 crushed Kung Fu Panda 2.
Essentially, this is Aaron bragging.
No, I'm not bragging because I'm surprised. And I'm also not bragging because I'm not in first place. That's Paul.
I haven't even been paying attention.
No, I've only looked the once. But, Paul's in first place. He is 100% correct so far. I've got one wrong. John and Chris both have two wrong, and Ethan doesn't have any right yet.
That's right. I'm awesome
but
that way.
We've only done four out of, like, 16 or something like that, and right now it could be anybody's game.
I still think Kung Fu Panda 2 is going to
it'll probably
more staying power.
It's
a kid's movie.
It'll probably win the longevity game. It probably will, but we're going up opening weekends.
Yeah. Well, the subsequent rounds factor a lot more. So, yeah, we'll see.
We'll see. It'll be interesting.
I was not a fan of the first Hangover at all. So,
it's got nothing to do with liking it for me.
I loved, I actually found out my mother hadn't seen Kung Fu Panda, so we Netflixed it and watched it.
I like Kung Fu Panda.
It's a fun movie. So yeah. I'm looking forward to seeing, I'll be seeing it hopefully tomorrow. So,
I'll probably take Chloe. I mean, I'm not particularly enthusiastic about it. I don't particularly care about seeing
That's
Hangover.
That's why they make matinees. It's awesome.
Yeah. I love it.
I like both the originals. I don't really have any interest in seeing either of the sequels, I guess.
Yeah, I liked I did like The Hangover. I thought it was an exceptionally well-made dumbass comedy. In so much as every comedy that comes out it just isn't as intelligently written as that. Now, I was caught off guard by that, but any sequels or anything like that aren't going to do it for me, because of the fact that at this point I'm going to be expecting, you know, a good screenplay, something being well written, and probably the way I'm understanding is it just sounds like it's more of the same.
Yeah, what I was told was that if you just watch the original one at the end of every scene, you just say "in Thailand," and you've seen the second one.
So that has been the end of our Geekly Happening segment. Stay tuned. We're going to be right back when we talk about the time travel movie as a genre.
Give me more whiskey. Give me a little more booze. I can't win, but I sure can lose. I don't remember just what you said. That you said it in vain. God damn it, honey, what am I to think? Yeah, I'll just sit around you and drink. There's only one thing I can do. I have to do it, baby. I have to see it through. Gonna stop loving you. I'm gonna stop loving you, babe. over you and stop loving you.
And we are back. This time around, we're going to be talking about all kinds of different movie genres. Like I talked about earlier, we always invite our guests to choose the genre that we talk about, because Ethan and I know everything, and we can talk any movie genre there is. Monty, you chose the time travel movies as a genre. Out of all the ones that you had available to you, why did you pick time travel as a genre?
You know, time travel is just one of those things that I've always loved. You know, even, you know, whether it's movies or books or anything, you can just do so much with it, you know, because you can do sort of the classic, we're going to go back in time and hang out with the dinosaurs. Mm-hmm. You can go to the future and, you know, see what's going on in the future and have that. And that's a completely different kind of movie, but still a time travel movie. Or you can do the, you know, much more intricate kind of time travel movie where you've actually got the characters moving in and out of their own sort of smaller plot where, you know, they're actually dealing with the ramifications of their own actions and undoing, you know, things that go on in their own lives and stuff. And that's also really interesting, really different, but still time travel. So it's like I realize that, you know, in the physics sense, time is indeed its own dimension, but it really, the idea of time travel really does open up a new dimension, you know, to the travel movie, you know, mm-hmm. where it's like a different place you can travel to.
Yeah. And I know when I was sort of looking at this as a genre, the whole time travel aspect of the story can really either make or break the movie. It can really make or break any story.
Son of a bitch. I just thought about one. Okay, sorry. That I didn't have on any of my lists.
And you can, if you handle the time travel aspect poorly, it can really just destroy what you're trying to do in the movie. And you can either sort of do it as a tongue-in-cheek thing, or you can make it really serious and get really mixed up in quantum physics and get kind of crazy.
Right.
I just don't like it when time travel is used superfluously. Right. You know, when it's just all like, yeah, and anyway, yeah, we went back in time, so we're awesome
I want to let it be known that if I was able to, I would have put Doctor Who on this list.
Because, I mean, you could have, but not really.
Not really. Because, I mean, especially in the last couple of seasons, I mean, they utilize time travel well as a plot element, as a motivational story element. So,
oh, sure. Yeah, Doctor Who is some of, and you know, same thing with Quantum Leap.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, we can't fit that on these lists either, but, you know, I just don't like it when, you know, time travel is used in a movie like a car.
Right.
You know, in so much
as... So Hot Tub Time Machine is not on your list.
No, and I did see that, and it wasn't the worst movie I've ever seen, but it's not on my list.
Oh, okay.
But, no, I don't like it when it's just used as a vehicle to get you somewhere to kick ass and or have sex or...
Right.
You know, it actually has to, you know, contribute to the plot in a way that some sort of vehicular thing wouldn't work.
Well, something big enough, it has to be,
you
know, it has to be an element of the story, and it has to be an important element of the story, you know. I mean, it's like, well, I'll just travel back in time to do this. It's like, well, no, it's a big thing. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, and there's so many different things you can do with the idea of, you know, two different characters or mm-hmm. two, you know, or whatever from different times. So you can have the fish out of water story where, you know, you're trying to fit in, but you can't because you're in your wrong time.
Right.
You know, or just sort of the, you know, the whole idea of, you know, mixing things that otherwise could never be mixed. You know,
right.
You can have dinosaurs and guys with guns.
Yeah, dinosaurs with laser guns. I mean, it's possible. You know what I mean?
I mean, it's obviously a staple of science fiction and of really pulp stuff, too. I mean, how many times did you have Nazis riding dinosaurs?
Yeah, we're changing the name of our podcast.
Nazis on dinosaurs.
Nazis on dinosaurs. That is all there is to it. Nazis on dinosaurs and electric bacon or whatever that last one was that we liked.
Electric boogaloo.
But yeah.
I like electric bacon, actually.
Electric bacon. There we go. copyright Aaron Hoover.
Yes.
But yeah. So we asked Monty to come up with a list of his favorite of the time travel movies. Ethan and I came up with them as well. So why don't we just get moving on that? And Ethan, what is your number six favorite time travel movie and why?
Well, as I was generating this list, I told Aaron earlier that I wanted movies on this list where they handled time travel well, where they handled it in a where it actually benefited the story and it was, you know, a fun element. So my number six is actually a movie that I hadn't thought about in bloody years, and it's Biggle's Adventures in Time, directed by John Howe in 1986. And my recollection of this movie is very, very, very foggy because I remember watching it on the Disney Channel.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a, you know, and it is available on DVD. It is out
Biggle's
there.
Biggle's Adventures in Time.
Biggle's Adventures in Time, based on a series of novels, apparently. And it's about, it's about this guy named Biggles who basically travels through time and meets up, basically has recurring adventures with where he travels back in time to World War, I believe it's World War One, where he runs into this pilot and they have various adventures and they sort of jump back and forth between the past and the future or the past and the present. And I just remember it being, they never really, I don't recall them explaining the time travel or why it was happening. It was happening to this guy for some reason. And I think sometimes that's just the best way to go is like, no, let's not weigh this down with a lot of scientific jargon. It's just happening. Anyway, moving on. And this is sort of the first movie I remember seeing that happen, and there's no real big explanation as to why it's happening. It's just is.
It just does. Huh?
It was a fun movie when I was a kid, and it worked its way onto my list and ended up at number six.
See, I just don't have anything to say about that because I haven't seen it.
Yeah.
So
yeah, I haven't seen it either, but it sounds interesting.
It sounds familiar.
Check it out.
It's not on instant stream, but it is available on DVD through Netflix. So cool. I mean, it is out there.
Cool.
Well, Monty, what's your number six?
When I was compiling my list, I tried to, come up with what I thought were the best time travel movies, but I also tried, I went out of my way to kind of make my list really varied
mm-hmm.
because I think that, you can go so many different directions with time travel.
Right.
But my number six is 12 Monkeys.
Yeah.
Which is directed by Terry Gilliam, stars Bruce Willis. Bruce Willis is probably a guy from the future.
Yeah.
who, might come from this dystopian future being sent back by these scientists
right.
in order to stop this plague that may be created by these terrorists called the Army of the 12 Monkeys.
Right.
What's so interesting about this movie, though, I mean, Terry Gilliam, I love Terry Gilliam.
Mm-hmm. Me too.
And, he creates this movie that it might be a time travel movie or it might be a movie about a crazy guy.
Right. And
who just thinks he's time traveling.
And 12 Monkeys is actually number three on my list.
Number two on my list.
It's a great movie. And it's one of those movies that you sort of hit the nail on the head there, Monty, with it. It sort of plays around with your perception. It could be time travel or it could be a ravings of a madman.
Right.
But it's one of those good movies where you sort of take away from it whatever you want. And Terry Gilliam is definitely a visionary director. I mean, he's hit and miss, but that's a definite hit for me. And 12 Monkeys the time travel is an essential part of it. They don't over explain it. It just works. It just happens.
Right.
You're not sort of focused on, wow, they're traveling through time. You're focused on the story itself. You're focused on the plague and, Brad Pitt running around being crazy. And, you're trying to figure out what's going on and trying to piece it all together sort of retroactively, because the movie shows you basically shows you the ending at the beginning and then shows you the ending.
But it doesn't make any sense at
right.
the beginning. It's just a wonderfully crafted movie.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a big fan of it. I think And I think this is on my sci-fi list, mm-hmm. if I remember right. And, you know, I said then, I'll say again, it's got fantastic special features on the DVD. Really, really, really good documentary on there. I really dig the movie, and I really dig Terry Gilliam. So,
Terry Gilliam's definitely an underrated director.
Well, I think he's so unique. He's such a very excellent director. So.
If only he
could I'll say too that Bruce Willison is really amazing in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think people kind of tend to think of Bruce Willis, you know, they think of Die Hard, and
right.
you know, he's just kind of this generic tough guy, you know, action movie star. But here he plays this kind of really complex guy. You don't really know if he's sane. He's not. Whether he's time traveling or not, he might still be insane.
Yeah.
You know, because of all the stuff he's going through. And it's really interesting. And Brad Pitt. I think this might be my favorite Brad Pitt role.
It's up there, yeah.
Yeah, it was the first time that really Brad Pitt, for me.
First Oscar nomination.
Showed me that, you know, he could act, you mm-hmm. know. And, but you're entirely right with Bruce Willis in this one. Is usually you think of him as the big action hero, but this one he is playing a very complex guy, and he has the acting chops for it.
Yeah, this is hands down my favorite Bruce Willis performance. I mean, there's no contest.
It's been a while since I watched my copy on DVD. I'm at the
but yeah, it and watch it great movie. Good pick. Good pick, Monty.
Well, Aaron, what's your number six?
Well, we're getting on to my number six. Here's the embarrassing one on my list. I'd be quite surprised if anybody has seen this besides me, and I'm not going to sing its praises too much because I don't think that you need to sing its praises too much. I just like the way that they used its time travel in it, and that is the Frank Nissen 2007 release of Cinderella 3, A Twist in Time. Do you know anything about that?
Nope.
I think I'd insert crickets at this point.
I knew it was a direct-to-DVD Disney sequel. You know, it's what it sounds like. And I don't remember her name. Lady Tremaine, the evil stepmother or whatever from Cinderella, mm-hmm. Gets a hold of... It's after the end of Cinderella. She gets a hold of the fairy godmother's wand, and she uses the wand to go back in time, and she makes Cinderella's slipper not fit when Prince Charming's putting it on, and it makes it fit. It's one of her daughters, and the prince is going to marry her, and blah 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 blah. I think it was neat in the fact that this isn't a cookie cutter sequel. It isn't just the Lady Tremaine is got another plot going on. It's just neat to see that it takes a story that's beloved to so many people, like Cinderella, and so familiar with it with these characters, you know, be it the fairy godmother or the cat Lucifer or whatever, and you see these familiar things happening, but through the deus ex machina of time travel, you get to see it from a different point of view, and in a lot of cases, it's actually kind of making fun of some of the stuff that didn't work about the original one. I don't own this movie. I don't want to own this movie, but I thought it was neat in so much as if I had to pick a best direct-to-DVD Disney sequel, it would be this or a few of the others. This is one that was particularly well-made, and it's my number six.
All righty. Good for your number
cool.
six.
Yeah. Yes.
All right.
I guess that brings us to my number five. Yeah. My number five, and I was actually surprised this movie was on my list and actually made it up so high on it when I was sort of doing my shuffling around. And it's actually the 2011 Duncan Jones movie Source Code. And really, it's sort of because of its similarity and nods to Quantum Leap. The time travel isn't overly explained in it. It works well in the concept of the story. And it just really, really worked well with it. And it's a good movie. It has some good action in it and whatnot. And the time travel isn't so overbearing that it takes away from the story. It's a really good element of the story. You have the character going back and forth from the future into the past, and he only can go there for 18 minutes or something, or 8 minutes, I think. And, you know, you don't think about how much you can do with 8 minutes until you watch the movie, and, of course, you can do quite a bit. But it's a good movie, and it's nods to Quantum Leap in it, and its use of time travel in the movie effectively moved it up to number 5 on my list. So there you have it right there.
You know, here's a fun little bit of trivia, speaking of Quantum Leap and mm-hmm. Source Code. In the movie, the main character at one point calls his dad.
Yep.
And the voice of his dad is Scott Bakula.
Yeah. I remember reading an interview with Duncan Jones about how he really wanted to get Scott Bakula somewhere into the movie, and that was it. And he wouldn't say how he did it, but it was awesome that they got him in there for that. And it's easily made that movie probably one of the things that jumped that movie up to number 5 on my list. So
yeah, cool.
I loved it. Well, Monty, what's your number 5?
My number 5, I'm going to guess I'm the only one who has this one on my list. It's going to show that I guess I'm kind of a softie. But again, I'm trying to show the different things you can do with time travel. And so my number 5 is Somewhere in Time, which is the Christopher Reeve movie. It's a love story. You know, you can say it's a chick flick.
Sure.
But, you know, it's really well done.
I've never actually heard of it.
Me neither.
Really? Really? Yeah. Okay. Let's see, when did it come out? 1980. It's based on a book by Richard Matheson, who's a pretty well.
Yeah, I know who that is.
Me too.
Yeah, absolutely. But Somewhere in Time is Christopher Reeve and Jane Seymour.
Uh-huh.
Basically, Christopher Reeve goes to this old hotel, sees this photograph of this woman from like 1912, and feels this strange connection with her. And one of the interesting things about this movie is its way of handling time travel. It doesn't uh-huh. have like a time machine or magic or anything like that. But basically, the main character achieves time travel by just self-hypnosis. He basically is in this room. He rids himself of anything that has anything to do with the present. He specifically gets some 1912 clothing, 1912 money, and, you know, makes the room look like it would be in 1912, and then hypnotizes himself, and it works. And, you know, so he crosses time to find his true love, and, you know, that it's that kind of a story. But it's well done.
Nice. That's one we're going to have to add to. I'm going to add that to my Netflix, I think. So.
Yeah. I
love
heard
me some
of
Christopher
it.
Reeve. So,
me too. He's badass.
This was the movie that he did right after Superman.
Oh, okay. Me adding that to list now.
It's got to be a huge list by now.
Yes, it is. Well, Aaron, what is your number 5?
My number 5 is, you know, speaking of childhood, all of us have those movies that, well, at least if we grew up in the VCR age, we have those movies that we owned on tape that we watched, you know, to varying degrees. It doesn't matter if you broke the tape watching it or you memorized every damn commercial that was on there. Uh-huh. It was one of those ones for me. I watched it a shitload. And what year was that? It was the 1986 Randall Kleiser directed Flight of the Navigator. I thought that's
actually my number 9.
That's I really liked that movie.
Yep.
You know, obviously by today's standards, it's a silly, dumbass little movie, but
oh yeah, it's
warms a soft spot in my heart.
And it's definitely one of those for me. I haven't seen the thing in probably close to 10 years, if
not
more.
Rachel hasn't even heard of it, so I'm gonna have to get her to watch it.
And it's one of those that you sort of forget that time travel is a part of it.
Sure.
At the end of it.
Yeah.
You know, the whole thing. And it's a fun, cute movie. And again, the time travel is just sort of a hand wave. It's an alien spacecraft that does it. And
that's Pee Wee Herman.
Yes, exactly. And that was great.
It's just a fun little movie, and I really liked it. And that weird little critter thing with like the foot that was like a hand that hung upside down, they ended up getting to keep at the end of the movie.
Yeah,
it is a good movie. I thought it was a lot of fun. I'd like to see it again. I haven't seen it in a while.
Yeah, that's another one off the Adam and Netflix queue. Awesome.
Yeah, I haven't seen that movie since the 80s.
It's probably been Yeah,
I think the last time I saw it was on VHS.
Oh,
easily.
Certainly.
Oh, recorded, yeah, me too.
Probably
me too.
Recorded off of the Disney Channel.
Yeah, it was a staple on the Disney Channel for a while, but it was released theatrically.
Yeah, yeah.
I didn't know that. I thought it was just a made-for-TV movie, but I found that out when I was researching it.
All right, cool.
That's my number five.
Cool. Well, I guess moving on to my number four.
Yep.
It's another movie that I sort of snuck up on me as far as how I liked it, and it's the 2006 directed by Tony Scott, Deja Vu.
I didn't see that.
It's excellent. Huh. It's one
I
of those
like
that time travel is a part of the movie and function and is in there quite a bit, but really doesn't happen until close to the end. It uses the whole time travel as a great story element in trying to uncover what happened in what basically happened in a terrorist bombing, which sort of goes back to the whole source code thing. But in Deja Vu, it's what they can do is they can only look back as far as look back into this this person's life and find out basically what happened with this terrorist incident that happened or this boat this bombing on this ferry. And it's one of those that it doesn't try to explain why it works. I mean, there's some science in there, and it's sort of like you wouldn't understand it's high-level quantum physics, I think, is some of the what the dialogue goes through. And but it's a good detective type of movie. You know, you're trying to figure out this. They use the time travel.
Denzel Washington, right?
Yeah, it's Denzel Washington, Tony Scott, which, you know, you say Tony Scott and Denzel Washington, that mean that's, what, four movies now?
Yeah.
And it's a lot of fun. It's a great movie.
Not a time travel movie, but Man on Fire was good.
Oh, yeah.
That movie quite a bit.
That was their first real outing.
That was a good movie. I must admit, I completely didn't even remember to put that on my list, but Deja Vu is a good movie. You're right.
Huh? I haven't seen it, so like once, man, I don't know if I've seen any of yours so far.
Hey, well, there you go. Well, Monty, what is your number four?
My number four... I'm going to guess for a lot of people, this is an odd pick. It's Back to the Future Part 2. And I'm specifically calling out Back to the Future 2, even though you can make the argument that both Back to the Future 1 and Back to the Future 3 are better movies, simply because I really like how it handles, how it incorporates time travel into the movie. You know, it's specifically sort of the example of the movie that actually has time travel within its own story.
Right, right.
And so I love how, you know, we actually see scenes from the first movie from the point of view of the characters in the second movie who have gone back.
Right.
You know, so you know, you've got Michael J. Fox. And he's looking and watching and seeing what he did in the first movie.
Right.
And, you know, making sure that he doesn't reveal himself to his other self. And that creates a very interesting kind of tension. And you know, it's a really interesting way to do a sequel, I think, because
it is.
You know, it's the way, you know, it doesn't play. It totally plays off of the first one.
It's another one of those.
It can't exist with it.
Yeah, it's another one of those movies that uses time travel as part of the story, as an integral part of it, instead of he travels back in time and then he has this adventure. It's like, no, time travel is essential part of this of that movie.
Absolutely, absolutely, yeah.
I mean, without the time travel element, there is no movie there. And I actually would agree with you. I mean, I recently went back and watched the trilogy for some reason, I seem to remember not liking number two that well, and
me too.
And I watched it again. Was like, no, that was actually pretty darn good.
It was very good, yeah.
The time travel that they use in it's actually very coherent. And the thing I liked about the number two there was they actually sit down and explain to you sort of this whole alternate reality and paradox thing, and sort of in not a way that makes you feel like an idiot.
Yeah.
But I mean, hey, it was Doc Brown obviously doing it, so you know we love Doc Brown.
Sure.
But yeah, Back to Future is awesome. Number two is definitely one for the ages.
Yeah, great movie.
It's also, I think, you guys maybe probably know this better than I do, but I think that, you know, with Back to the Future Part 2 and 3, I think they were the first time that they ever, like, made two sequels to a movie at once.
I don't know about the first time, but it's certainly the first time I was aware of it.
Yeah. Yeah,
yeah. I mean, now it's pretty common. They did it with pirates movies.
It's not the first time they did it in my memory, but it is first time I was aware of it, because they did it in Superman 2, obviously, was back-to-back, and so was Three Musketeers, the Four Musketeers.
That's different, because that was going to be one movie.
That they split into two.
Superman and Superman 2 is two different productions, wasn't it?
Not originally, no.
What
it was? They were going. They were filming back to back. Anyway, okay. Yeah. It's
yeah,
sort of
hey,
it's sort
time
of
travel
thing.
For Superman.
Yes, time travel. Yes. Hey, there you go.
Cool.
Well, Aaron, what's what are we on? Your number four?
Four.
What's your number four, Aaron?
1986. Francis Ford Coppola. Peggy Sue Got Married.
I have not seen it.
It's not time travel in the traditional sense of a DeLorean or a hot tub or something like that. But, it was just kind of done through sheer will and wanting it. And, it's Kathleen Turner and Nicolas Cage. Yeah. Right? Some reason I was thinking it was fucking Meryl Streep. And Jim Carrey's in it, too.
Oh, really?
Yeah. But, it's Kathleen Turner, and she's in a...
It's one of my mother's favorite movies. I've never seen it.
Great movie. And I've watched it. Well, a few times over the years, and it wasn't until I watched it, a month ago, something like that, that mm-hmm. I found out that Francis Ford Coppola directed it. I had no clue. None. Kathleen Turner, she's in a loveless marriage, about ready to go through a divorce, goes to a, I think it's a 20-year high school reunion or something like that, and, life's a bitch, and she just wishes she could do things over again, and she wakes up the next day as a teenager again, and she gets to do everything over again with her husband. And it's a nice little movie about love and consequences. And obviously, it's got those funny little moments, like because she's an adult living in a child's body, because she was as Peggy Sue, the adult, she was an alcoholic. Well, that transfers with her, so she's getting all kinds of drunk as a teenager and getting in trouble with her parents about it, and bearing in mind this is the 50s, right. So that was a much bigger deal than it is now. It's a good movie, and I just felt the need to put it in there, because I think it used time travel in an interesting way.
Cool.
So, my number four.
My number three was 12 Monkeys, directed by Terry Gilliam, so I guess Monty's. We'll jump into Monty. What's your number three?
All right, well, you guys, I think something is afoot at the Circle K. Because my choice is Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure from 1989.
It's my number 10. I'm a fan of that movie, believe it or not.
I haven't watched it in so long.
I haven't seen it in a while, but man, did I love it when I was younger.
Here's why I think that this is a great time travel movie, right? I mean, it's just a silly comedy about two high school kids who, get access to a time machine, mm-hmm. and in order to pass their history exam, actually go and explore history.
Yeah.
But there's a moment, and it comes probably about three-fourths of the way through the movie, where Bill and Ted they need to break some people out of jail. And they have no idea how they're going to do it. And so one of them gets the idea that what they should do is just remember that later on they should use their time machine and travel back in time and leave the keys that they need to get into this locked room, this locked cell, under this bush. Right. And so then they go over to the bush and there they are. Right.
Right.
There's the key.
It leads up to the watch winding moment later on, like, oh, Ted, don't forget to wind your watch, so he doesn't forget.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly. And so I love that, right? Because here you've got just this sort of silly movie, but somebody, the writers actually thought about, what if you did have a time machine? What could you do?
Mm-hmm.
Right. And that's exactly the kind of stuff you could pull off.
Right.
If you had access to time travel. The way they do, which is just, it just works, right? And you can just go back and as many times as you want. And there's not really any consequences. And if you've got that kind of access to technology, that's exactly what you could do. And I think that's really cool.
It's also got George Carlin as Rufus. You got to love that.
You got to love that. I agree.
That's a great movie. I put it on my number 10. I'm really interested in the third one that's coming out.
I didn't like the second one.
I didn't either, but I like the idea of 75-year-old
you know, Alex Winter and Keanu Reeves, how old are they now, 45, doing the time-traveling thing. I would love to see those guys as 45-year-olds, you know, doing this time-travel thing. And I find it hilarious that Keanu Reeves is signed on for it. I mean, obviously Alex Winter does because he needs to eat. But, you know, Keanu Reeves, you know, I would almost think that he's...
I think I looked on his IMDb page and he sells insurance or something like that.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh,
yeah.
Really? Wow.
Yeah. Probably, you know, probably does that, you know, to get his own medical insurance. He's probably living off of residuals of that.
Lost
sure Boys.
He still gets checks for it.
Oh, I'm sure he does. But yeah.
It might be for 12 cents, but hey, it's 12 cents. Yeah.
I'm a fan of the movie. I have a suspicion if I watched it now, it might fall down a couple of notches, but I enjoyed it an awful lot growing up. So
yeah, I haven't seen it in a long time, but I have really good memories of it.
Sure.
And yeah, I'm intrigued about the third one. It could be cool.
It very well could be. There's been enough time to where it shouldn't be a stale rehashing.
Yeah.
But you know, yeah, and that was directed by Stephen Herrick, by the way.
Right.
All right. Cool. Right, cool.
1989.
All right, well, Aaron, what's your number? We're at your number three?
Number three. Directors come up once before on this list. 1981, Terry Gilliam, Time Bandits.
That's my number two.
That's a fantastic movie.
That's my number 10, yeah.
It's a fantastic movie, isn't it?
These little guys steal God's map of time. That is the explanation, and you go with it.
Yep. Got Ian Holm as Napoleon.
John Cleese is Robin Hood. Sean Connery is... Charlemagne?
He's Agamemnon.
Agamemnon, right.
That's right.
And then he's also the fireman.
Yeah, also the fireman.
Don't touch it. It's evil.
Yeah. Every frickin' little person actor you've ever heard of is in that movie.
And who played God? Was it John Gielgud?
Not God, but the guy in the suit.
The supreme being.
The supreme being.
Yeah.
I think that is Gielgud. Yeah,
it might be John Gielgud.
It's been a while since I saw
it.
And David Warner.
3 months ago, David Warner's death or evil.
Evil.
Not death, evil.
Yeah, time lasers, 8 o'clock high.
Yeah.
Sorry.
I love the fact that the parents explode at the end of the movie. It's just got those weird-ass Terry Gilliam sensibilities.
It's one of those essential... It's a Terry Gilliam movie.
Yeah.
You go, okay, I get it now. Yeah, it's Terry Gilliam. Yeah.
It's an awful lot of fun. It's a movie that I happily introduced Rachel to. She'd never heard of it. Yeah, and I'm like,
there are a lot of people out there probably never heard of it.
It's a great movie. And there's a Criterion of it, if I remember right. It's beautiful. It's a lot of fun. I like Terry Gilliam an awful lot, and I realized this recently. I think it was with the second death of Don Quixote that I really realized how much I enjoy him as a director. But it's my number three.
It's my number two, Time Bandits.
Yep. My number 10. I think it's a great movie too. In fact, it'd probably be higher on my list if we were making this list a few years ago because.
Yeah. Yeah,
It's been a long time since I've seen it.
It's so hard to order these stupid lists.
Yeah,
I
you ask me tomorrow, my list will probably be different.
Well,
anyway,
my number one is almost always going to be the same, but you know, at the same time, man, they're tough sometimes. But
So my number two is Time Bandits. Monty, what's your number two?
My number two is Terminator. I had to go with this one. James Cameron, 1984. You know, it's such a classic, iconic sort of action movie. But you know, the fact that it is about time, you know, and it's not just about Arnold going back in time and you know being a robot, right? It actually incorporates a lot of great time travel ideas in it. You know, the fact. You know, I'm totally spoiling it for the two people in the world who haven't seen this movie. But, you know, the fact that you've got the character Reese, who is in love with Sarah Connor. And so he goes back to Sarah Connor. He's got this one picture of her.
Uh-huh.
And he wonders, what is she thinking about, you know, as this picture was taken. And then at the end of the movie, you realize after they've fallen in love and they've gotten together and he's died, that she was thinking about him. Right. I mean, that's just great kind of time travel circular plot.
Yeah, exactly. You know? I always found it has like a nice, you know, poetic, cyclical storytelling kind of thing. And the fact that, you know, in trying to stop John Connor from being born,
Skynet.
Skynet creates him. I find that an awful lot of fun.
Yeah, it's beautiful. It's beautiful. The thing that bugs me the most about all the sequels, I mean, and don't get me wrong, like, I loved Terminator 2 and everything.
Yeah, yeah.
But the premise, the very, very premise of Terminator is that, you know, the future is not set in stone.
Right.
We can change it. And then the sequels go on to kind of show, no, the future is set in stone.
That's sort of where I was going to go here. I would agree with you on Terminator if you discount the sequels. Because really, if you start getting into the meat of the time travel of the Terminator series, it's like, okay, well, in order for Skynet to be built, Skynet would have to know that the first Terminator failed. So,
yeah.
And then you sort of get into weird paradoxes.
I agree completely.
Bleed out of the ears.
Yes. And then you've gone cross-eyed and you're done.
I love Terminator 2 as an action movie.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I mean,
it's a great action film.
But the whole Terminator franchise is just it's a clusterfuck of bad time travel ideas and stuff like that.
Right. So. I agree, actually. That's why I definitely wanted to choose the first one.
Yeah, where usually you have time travel being a fish out of water story. If someone travels back in time, they're a fish out of water. This one you have a fish out of water story in modern times with people travel back here, and then you're a fish out of water because this cyborg's trying to kill you.
Yeah, it's just...
So, I mean, yeah, it's a great...
And it's the sequels that lessened it for me. Why it's 10th on my list, you know, because
it's not even on mine.
Yeah, I felt it deserved a mention, but at the same time, you know, because of the fact of, you know, what you ended up happening, especially with, and once again, I like Terminator 3 as an action movie, not as much as Terminator 2, and then Terminator Salvation isn't even a time travel movie at all.
I liked it too. So.
I didn't like it, but, you know, that's just me.
Yeah, and to each their own.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, but
it's just...
Yeah. That first one, though, is definite classic. Definitely
a classic.
Aaron, what's your number two?
My number two is, we already talked about it, 12 Monkeys.
12 Monkeys. All right. So I guess we're to my number one.
And yep.
My number one has been mentioned sort of tangentially, and mine is Back to the Future, directed by Robert Zemeckis. And really, I guess to be a cop-out, I sort of lump all three into this whole Back to the Future thing.
Yeah, sure.
And we've talked about Back to the Future as an adventure film. We've talked about it as science fiction. And it's one of those – you mentioned time travel movie. And
Back to the Future pops up.
Back to the Future is one of the first things that will pop in your head because it's such a part of at least my childhood. It's such a part
certainly.
Of pop culture and everything. Going back to, I mean, in the second movie, they explain the whole paradox and alternate timeline thing in such a nice way that you can understand it. In the way of Marty, you know, why can't we just go back, you know, back to the future? We'll change it. Well, we can't because we're in this alternate timeline.
Right.
Da, da, da. And just its use of time travel in the story context. Granted, there are some time travel holes in the third movie.
Oh, Christ, yeah.
But the second one is spot on, and the first one, I think, is spot on. It's definite fun movies. And by the third one, you just don't care.
But you're right. There are plot holes in it, but I still love it. It's just such a fun movie.
It's just a fun, rollicking,
It's one of those. It's one of the things where by the time you're watching the third one, yes, there are holes, but you just don't care.
Yeah, they've done you so well for two movies.
Like, this is just too much fun to nitpick and to get all uppity about it. I'm just going to enjoy the movie and sit back and enjoy number three, and we'll have this great trilogy. And it'll be great.
Yeah, and motherfucker, they're going to push a DeLorean with a train. How cool is that? You know,
and then you got
and he calls him
time travel train,
and he goes by Clint fucking Eastwood.
Exactly.
I mean, you got to love it. Whose birthday was yesterday?
Oddly, you know, we've talked about the trivia tracks on DVDs.
Oh,
the DVDs have those trivia tracks. Those are great.
Those are a lot of fun.
On those, it's amazing. Those are tons of fun.
Those are great Blu-rays. Also,
I totally want that on Blu-ray.
Yeah, I rented them. I need to buy them.
All right, Monty, what is your number one?
My number one, I'm interested to find out if you guys are familiar with this movie. I think that it is hands down the best time travel movie ever. It is a movie from 2004 called Primer.
Primer? No, I have not heard of that.
I've heard of it. I just didn't know anything about it.
It's a super low budget movie, literally made for like $7,000.
Holy shit.
Written, directed, produced by a guy named Shane Carruth. He's also stars in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And it's got no special effects. But the reason that it is so amazing is that it's just such an intelligent movie. It's I have watched this movie, no joke, like 9 times, and I'm still not 100% sure.
Holy shit.
That I can totally follow it.
It won the grand jury prize at Sundance.
So you're watching this, the movie just starts out and you don't really know what's going on. There's just these guys, they're clearly really techie guys, and they're building something in the garage and you don't know what it is, but you kind of follow them along and you realize what they've kind of created by accident is this time machine. And I can't sit down and explain it to you now, but as you're watching the movie and as they explain to you how it all works, I swear to you, you will say, "Holy shit, that will work. That will work." You know, and it's like you're watching them really invent a time machine and a time machine that works. And, you know, it's one of those movies where, because it handles time travel so intelligently, you know, the characters begin to do things with their time travel capability that people would really do. And you don't realize actually everything they're doing. You don't realize it until you watch the movie through like a second or a third time. And you realize that, like, at one point when one character is talking to another character, he's actually talking to a future version of that character that has come back and is, you know, taking the place of his, you know, it's so complex, but it's just awesome. Uh-huh. I love this movie.
Huh. Sean Connery was offered the lead role in it, but he turned it down because he didn't understand the script.
I'm going to have to check that one out.
I am too. Not on instant stream, but it is available. Have it sent to you on Netflix. So cool.
Right. And for guy made it for $7,000. $7,000. That's really impressive.
Yeah. I mean, wow. And 80% of that was spent on film stock. So yeah, wow.
I swear to you though, if you get the DVD, if you rent this movie, just expect that you're gonna have to watch it twice.
Okay.
At least.
I know that, like, and a spoiler, but Donnie Darko is not on my list. But it was one of those movies that, like, made me I had to watch it a second time to make sure I didn't understand it. And I was right.
No, it's still not getting
it. It's still stupid. Okay, moving on. I guess we're on my number one?
Yep.
My number one has been mentioned, not tangentially or anything. It was just flat out brought up. My number one is Back to the Future Part 2. Because of the fact of what you brought up, it is because of the fact that I spent a decade hating this movie. And I just recently rewatched it, and I realized it was a brilliant time travel movie.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I probably enjoy the first one more.
And that's something to say. It's with time travel involved in any story, it can get really muddy. And that one does a great job of keeping it sane.
And
that's so awesome, because you you know, you talk to most people and they completely dismiss the second one.
Right.
You know, oh, I didn't really like the second one. You know, but I really think it handles time travel so well.
Mm-hmm. You know, but you'll see a movie, you know, stuff like, Time Bandits and stuff. And it's pretty funny to see a modern day kid go back in time and, you know, like, see the Battle of Waterloo or something. And which is fine, other than the fact that, you know, I wasn't at Waterloo. And I don't particularly know what it looks like. To me, it was just, you know, it's just kind of mind-bending to see all this shit happen in Back to the Future Part 1 that I'm very familiar with from Part 1 happening in Part 2 that is changing what happened in the first movie. I mean, it just really handles the time travel element really well. I mean, Back to the Future Part 3, it is a time travel movie, I mean, absolutely, but, you know, it falls under the umbrella of a lot of problems with a lot of time travel movies in that the time travel thing is more or less used as a vehicle.
Right.
But, you know, definitely not true in Part 2. I mean, it was just, I feel bad for all the wasted time on it, because, especially watching a second time through, because, you know, it's a pretty common thing where, you know, you hear the thing, oh, if you go back and you step on a bug or something, it could make your mother sterile or something like that. And, but they always avoid that kind of crap in time travel movies. When in this one, they went back in time, Marty got greedy, and he fucked up everything because he grabbed the sports almanac. And just a great, fun movie. And I think it's the best time travel movie, certainly out of that trilogy, and it's certainly my favorite that I could think of, at the very least. But, yeah.
Well, the Back to the Future movies are so interesting because they're all time travel movies, but they all use time travel in a different way. You know, the first one is the fish out of water. Modern person goes back to the past and has to try to fit in and make it all work. You know, and the second one is sort of that time travel within the story that you already know kind of thing. And then the third one is just, let's go way back in the past and just have a rollicking adventure.
I've already been over why I love the Back to the Future movies numerous times at this point. I totally agree with you guys. It's they're number two, way underrated by people out there. And
I was underrating it a month ago myself.
Yeah, you run into people, it's like, oh, I hated the second one. And you know, I'd really want to challenge them and say, okay, why did you hate the second one? And how long has it been since you watched it?
I don't have the energy for that nonsense.
Part of me is
anymore.
Wondering is maybe when we were younger, we didn't enjoy it that much. But now
I saw this one.
Yeah, and as we've matured as the film going audience has matured, we actually get it more now. And it's great.
Yeah, I love it. So that's why I chose it for my number one.
Cool.
So,
I guess we're at the rundown now, huh?
Yeah, let's run this shit down.
All right. Well, my number 10 was Time After Time, 1979, directed by Nicholas Meyer. Number 9 was Flight of the Navigator, 1986, directed by Randall Kleiser. Number 8 was Frequency.
That was the one that I was talking about that I completely forgot about.
In 2000, directed by Gregory Hoblit. And that movie just surprised me.
That was a good movie.
I liked that movie.
It had Jesus in it.
It's a really good movie.
My number 7 is a guilty pleasure of mine. It's Star Trek IV, The Voyage Home, 1986, directed by Leonard Nimoy. Number 6, Biggles Adventures in Time. Number 5, Source Code. Number 4, Deja Vu. Number 3, 12 Monkeys. Number 2, Time Bandits. And number 1, Back to the Future.
Excellent. Monty, run us down your top 10.
All right. Well, so I'm gonna sneak in an honorable mention on top of my top 10.
All right.
And I'm calling it an honorable mention because it's only sort of a time travel movie. It depends on how you look at time travel, but I'm going to throw in Groundhog Day.
It's my number 8.
We talked about that one.
It's my number 8.
We mentioned time travel last week, and we were trying to go through movies. I'm like, Groundhog Day.
Yeah.
So my number 10 was Time Bandits, which you've already talked about.
Right.
My number 9 was the movie that we haven't talked about. It's a 1980 movie directed by Don Taylor, The Final Countdown.
It's about the battleship, right?
Yeah.
Yep. I've seen
aircraft
cool movie.
Carriers, right. Back to World War II. Yep. My number 8 was Star Trek IV. Mm-hmm. Maybe the ultimate fish out of water time travel story.
Yeah, literally fish out of water, but a bunch.
That's like the fucking whales, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yep. my number 7 was Time After Time, which you also just mentioned. Mm-hmm. Great time travel movie. And then number 6 was 12 Monkeys, 5 was Somewhere in Time, 4 Back to the Future Part 2, 3 Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure, 2 Terminator, and 1 Primer.
Nice.
Excellent. All right, my number 10 was Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure, my number 9 was The Terminator, my number 8 was Groundhog Day, my number 7 was another movie that I've mentioned before, but I actually haven't actually... It's never hit below 6, and it is a 1991 Sam Raimi film of Army of Darkness. My number
groovy.
We need to get to the point where we're actually going to talk about those movies.
Yeah.
My number 6 is Cinderella 3.
Well, I think we got cult movies coming up sometime soon.
Oh, shit,
so, yeah.
I don't know. I mean, maybe Evil Dead, but Army of Darkness cult movie?
Anyway.
Maybe. All right, let's see, Cinderella 3 was my 6. And my number 5 was Flight of the Navigator. My number 4 was Peggy Sue Got Married. My number 3 is Time Bandits. My number 2 is 12 Monkeys. And my number 1 favorite is the Back to the Future Part 2 by Bobby Z. So that has been our list. That was, I had a hell of a time putting this list together.
Oh, yeah.
Because I tried, and you, Ethan and I are at a disadvantage over you because we do this every week.
Yeah.
And we want to talk about movies that we haven't talked about before.
Uh-huh.
And so it's getting hard when, you know, you just put Back to the Future as your favorite adventure movie or whatever.
Right.
And it was, and I ended up giving up, and I double dipped on some of these.
Oh,
and I had to.
You got to do it at some point.
Yeah,
so.
I had to. Because truth be told, I don't know if I realized we were doing a time travel show until last week.
Yeah.
So maybe I should travel back in the time and warn myself not to
maybe
not to be grabbing all these so early.
But yeah, well, I think it's pretty interesting that, you know, while we had a lot of classics that, you know, pretty much had to be on everybody's list, you know, there was a lot of variants, you know.
Sure, yeah. Oh yeah. Oh yeah,
I got a lot of new movies to check out here. That's
I think it's funny.
I got at least three or four of them that I'm having to add to my Netflix queue.
Oh yeah, I think it's funny that we had 30 potential movies here. We overlapped a little bit, and none of us brought up 1960s Time Machine.
Yeah,
it was a good movie, but it didn't make my list.
The
2004 one
really
was horrible.
Love it.
Oh, yeah, 2004 was awful.
Yeah, but I liked the 1960 one. It didn't make my list though. But yeah, it's cool though. I had fun.
None of the
that.
Planet of the Apes movies made it on either.
See,
I thought about the Planet of the Apes movies. I really did.
It's not time travel.
You don't watch
travel.
Those for time travel. You watch those for the apes.
Yeah, I like monkeys. I don't like. Yeah,
yeah, monkeys all the way.
Yeah, monkeys. We got Sound Monkey over there making noise.
Yep.
But yeah, so that has been our top six list of our favorite time travel movies of all time. Stay tuned. We're going to be right back with the outro section. Segment. You have joined us on issue number 55, where we talked about time travel movies. We have Monty Cook on, and he was the one that chose time travel movies as their topics. Thank you for that, Monty. It was an awful lot of fun.
Oh, yeah. Thank you. I had a great time.
Yeah, it's always, I love talking about movies. That's why I do this little podcast.
I love movies. I'm a gamer. I'm a game designer and a writer, but, you know, deep down, if I didn't do anything but just talk about movies, that'd be okay.
Hey, if you're ever talking to the Dorcas Rising guys and they decide they need a overweight, 30-year-old, gray-haired, missing tooth dude, let me know, because, you know, I'll happily be a nerd for that.
I talk to Ben Dobbins pretty regularly. I'll talk to him. See if we can get him on the show.
That'd be cool. Actually. That'd be cool.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's a great idea. Or Matt Vansel, the director.
Any of those Dead Gentleman guys, I love that.
But usually on the outro segment, we give our guests an opportunity to whore themselves out and talk anything and everything they want to about their web presence, anything you'd like us to check out, and things like that. Do you have anything like that for us, Monty?
Yeah, you can go to EscapePod, which is a science fiction. It's basically an audio science fiction magazine. Once a week, they put up a brand new podcasted audio version of a story. I've got a story up there that went up, I think, about 2 weeks ago called A Small Matter, Really. Beyond that, you can find me at MontyCook.com. I recently just had a serialized short story at Paizo.com. Every month in Game Trade magazine, I write a serialized Cthulhu mythos story that's ongoing called The Shandler Chronicles. I've got a nonfiction book that is out called The Skeptic's Guide to Conspiracies.
That's a good one. I have that one.
Oh, thanks. And plus lots of game stuff.
Yeah, one or two game books out there.
Right.
Just a small smattering of work in the game industry.
About 23 years.
Huh? Yes.
How much could you have possibly gotten done in just 23 short years? Yeah. So what's going on next week, Ethan?
Next week we are being joined by John Rogers. We're going to be talking some film noir with him.
He's going to rock.
John Rogers is one of the creators and, I believe, executive producer and directed several episodes of the TV series Leverage. He's also done some game design here and there. Most notably, he does a lot of script work and whatnot, and of course is one of the various writers on Transformers. Did some work on it's that first one there. Did some work on
Transformers.
He was one of the writers on Transformers. He was also one of the writers on Catwoman. So,
oh dear Lord!
And the Core, American Outlaws, various things. I mean, so he's got quite the presence in the film industry. Leverage is a good show, and I'm looking forward to talking some film noir with the guy. So that's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah. Wow. Another person with an IMDb page.
Yeah. No.
Holy shit, man. Hey, Cosby. Jackie Chan Adventures, right on. And The Core, that had Academy Award winner Hilary Swank in it.
I know.
Wow. And what, Academy Award winner Halle Berry.
Halle Berry, yes.
An Academy Award watcher, Colin Farrell. Cool. So, I mean, yeah.
Yeah.
This should be good. I like Colin Farrell. He's in a really good movie that Christopher Lee was in also. Triage. I watched that pretty recently. I like that movie. But, cool. I'm looking forward to that. I'm really looking forward to talking film noir. It's one of my more favorites.
Oh, yeah. So. Definitely. I think we're going to get some good discussion out of that one. So, tune in next week, I guess, for John Rogers and film noir.
We should do that. He's directed Leverage.
Cool.
Yes, he has.
I know I will. That'll be cool.
Excellent.
Okay. Well, I don't have anything else. Do you?
I do not.
Well, until next week, I'm Aaron.
I am Ethan.
Let your geek flag fly.